Hello, everybody. Welcome to Wise Wild Women. I'm your host, Janet Carolison, with my co-host, Teresa J. Morris. And today we have our special guest, Jeanette Lucas, and she is a psychic detective, Jeanette Matasha Lucas, and former U.S. government secret psychic. Okay, so that was about a presentation you're going to do. So you're widely known in the southern U.S. and internationally for, she's known for her psychic detection skills and for locating more than 20 missing persons, both deceased and alive. She's been featured in print and broadcast media for her work on various homicide cold cases, and her casework includes the high-profile cases of Chandra Levy, and she was covered by NBC's DC affiliate, et cetera, et cetera. I've got a bio on her. It's pretty long here. I'm going to be reading it. I'm going to have Jeanette tell us about herself. That's more interesting, coming from the person who lived it. And you can find a full bio and more information on Jeanette at AquarianRadio.com. And my co-host is Teresa J. Morris. Before we bring you on, Jeanette, I'm going to have Teresa come on. And Teresa, do you have Jeanette's information up on one of your websites?
No, I've got to do all that for Jeanette, which I plan on doing tomorrow and Friday, working with her. But she's been on one of my shows, and I asked her back to be on our Wise Women Folks. She's been on TJ Marsh ET Radio, and I'd love to work with her in the future in our webinars and workshops with Janet Carolison of Hawaii. I'm in Gulf Breeze, Florida, and Jeanette is going to be up in the Virginia, D.C. area, but she covers the whole world. So I'm really looking forward to everybody getting to know her. So back to you, Janet, from Gulf Breeze, Florida.
Okay, and I'm over here in Maui, Hawaii. We go coast to coast and around the planet. Okay, Jeanette, welcome to our show. Let's kind of just focus on you for the next 15 minutes or so, and you can talk about your story. Who are you? This is a new listening audience. We're going to take this out across the planet with about 25 to 30 different platforms. So we're going to get a lot of views and downloads and listens before this is over. So take it away, Jeanette. Who are you? What do you do?
So thanks for having me, first of all, ladies. Janet in Hawaii, wish I was there. Or should I say TJ, I wish I was in Florida. Oh, my gosh, I'm up in the D.C. area right now, and it's probably 27 degrees with a minor wind chill factor. So it's probably more 25 degrees. So, you know, enjoy where you are now because it's very cold here. Well, my background is basically that I am the legacy of my father, Louis Matasha. And my father was very interested in the paranormal because his father was dying, and his father was Louis Sr., and his best friend was Bob Monroe of the Monroe Institute in Charlottesville, Virginia. And so he started picking away little by little about the paranormal, from dreams to learning about dowsing to communicating with the other side. He never had a near-death experience where I have, but he just was so shocked by the possibilities of aliens, UFOs, anything, the plethora of the umbrella of the paranormal, and he just gobbled it up. He just loved it. During the day, my father was a land surveyor, and I'm the youngest of five, but now as an adult, I was sort of trained when I was young in elementary school, about age seven, in the backyard, when the U.S. Chiefs of Staff, I shouldn't say U.S., but American Chiefs of Staff came to our house in Falls Church, Virginia, from the Pentagon. And when they came to the house, they wanted to learn about dowsing for Vietnam. And they had some other federal agency representatives with them, and I guess a couple of congressmen or senators. And they were learning about the skill of dowsing. And dowsing is a tool that can be a L-stick, or a long time ago, when in the 1400s or 1600s, when they found out about water, it was a stick that was pulled to the earth, and they called that water witching. And the man that invented the technique, his name was Dowsing. So the king said, "Okay, you found it, Mr. Dowsing. So we're going to call it Dowsing." What an odd name, eh? And to this day, there are people still called Dowsing. They're from England, most of them. But what's interesting is dowsing can help you with anything from missing objects, missing persons, missing animals. I'm a treasure hunter. I'm pretty well known in the industry for some of my treasure hunting work. And it doesn't have to be a big cache, C-A-C-H-E, I believe. Can be a small one, like from the dark ages. And a lot of people think, oh, you know, I'm not going to find much. I'm on the beach. And they find a ring, and it's worth $3,000. I had a client who found a ring, and it was worth $90,000. I had another client, and he found a ring worth $300,000. I mean, they're all based on the era they're from. But moving forward, so I learned about dowsing, and I knew that you could do almost anything with it, from not just trying to find tunnels in Vietnam to locating booby traps and bombs in Vietnam. So my father videotaped the session for the military and sent a copy of the videotape. I shouldn't say videotape. He filmed it in 16 millimeter and sent each recruiting office a videotape of the 16 millimeter of the dowsing trial and error, I guess I should say. And I actually had that footage. So the here and now is I started off, that was my kickstart, and then I had a near-death experience the same year, and I learned about reincarnation at 7, and I was told about reincarnation. I mean, who would have thought at 7 years old? And then about age 8-ish, I almost drowned, and a woman came to me and pushed me up in the water, and she saved my life. And it turns out it wasn't a woman at all. It was like either an angelic being who helped me not drown. And what's coincidental is that I have a twin, and she almost drowned in the same lake, and the same woman came to save her. Now, I don't think she was a ghost. I think she was more of a angel type of person. I mean, that's the quickest description I could give of the person. But my life didn't stop changing there. When I grew up in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, I had another near-death experience with kidney failure in my about age 27. And at age 27, I had a lengthy visit with the other side. And I was in the hospital, and the kidneys failed, and I got to meet a lot of people, which is going to be part of a book I've been asked to write. And it's not scary to die. I mean, I did want to cover a little bit about NDEs today, near-death experiences, because right now so many people are traumatized by grief and by loss, whether it's an animal or a relative. And I thought, you know what, let me just reassure people. When you die, the pain is over. When you die, you feel like you're still breathing. When you die, you get to meet your maker. Yes, it could be the devil, or yes, it could be God. And most of the time, people are in fear of, hey, am I going to hell or am I going to heaven? I would say most of us go to heaven, so that's the good news. But anyway, so back at 27, I started becoming a full-time psychic, which is what I was told to do when I came back. And then I jumped right into becoming a psychic who locates the missing. And eventually I became a private investigator. But, it's, you know, private investigators across America, it's mostly men. And the field is very full of men who don't want to move over. So I was a little disappointed with that kind of approach that, gosh, I thought the education would help me, which it did. But I didn't continue with PI, you know, PI work per se. I continued as a consultant. So I did some writing work, and down the road I lectured for either colleges or universities and for the American Society of Dowsers. And I tell everybody, if you want to get into dowsing and learn one of the apples on the tree from the paranormal, the American Dowsing Society is in Vermont. It's all on my website, reachjeanette.com. And they have classes. Their annual convention is, I think, in June. And it's just great. It's a lot of fun. You meet some nice people, and they cover lots of properties. They have lots of ideas or suggestions or topics. I don't want to say they cover healing, because that's against the charter, but they cover dowsing and different techniques. Like, if you want the best garden, I have a fantastic garden with dowsing. So there's all sorts of ideas or directions you can take your dowsing. But let's move on. So after 27, at about age 37, I thought my near-deaths were over, and I had another near-death. I died on the operating table in Washington, D.C. at Sibley Hospital. The anesthesiologist stole the anesthesia, so I died. I flatlined on the table, and people came down to put me back into my body, and it was very interesting. I heard the conversation with the nurses and the doctors, and after it was all said and done, I was pushed to my room, and I finally survived, and my doctor came in, and he goes, do you remember me? And I said, yes, I remember you. And he goes, well, your original doctor couldn't handle your tumor, so I came in and I saved your life because you flatlined. Are you okay? And I said, oh, yeah. And he goes, well, are you going to sue us? And I said, why would I do that? You just saved my life. So you have to have a positive perspective on life, which I really do. And right. I meet wonderful people. I meet wonderful people like you. And it's, the paranormal is the never-ending encyclopedia. It's so fun, and I love it. So tell me what you want to know, and I'll share with you what I can. That's my basic background.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I do want to say, I probably took too long saying it, but I do want to say, yes, I've worked
great.
With some high-profile cases. So thank you for having me.
We'll go over that stuff, though. I want to back up to your the angel that lifted you up, and Teresa had a similar experience. Now, I've never had the I almost drowned and an angel picked me up experience that I remember, but I did have some kind of NDE experience with, but anyway, that let's focus on the drowning and the angel. TJ, you want to tell us about your drowning and the angel experience?
Sure. For the record, which we're doing now in 2020, before, so you'll know, Jeanette, I wasn't really out in covert so much until about 2007. But what she's talking about is when I was a child, and we lived in Monroe, Louisiana, and there was this huge pool, swimming pool, for the public that was there before I came in the 50s with a big fountain in the middle. And a lot of times they'd fill it all the way above the top rim. There's usually like 6 to 12 inches from the time where the water would go over in a little trough and then up. But anyway, it was way up to, it was floating over the top, so it was like an extra probably foot of water than I was accustomed to. And we would usually walk out instead of swimming. So that day it was relatively windy, but I remember I got out halfway and I couldn't walk, but I couldn't get up to swim. It was like something was pulling me under. But I was going out to the middle of the pool, which was really, really deep. But I basically went, I was trying to get up on top of the water, but I got way out, and then I couldn't touch the bottom and I couldn't swim. But I fought. I got out to where the water was coming off of the fountain, and I remember looking up and seeing I was deep. So it was so deep, my hand was over my head, hand reaching up to the, you know, to the above water, and I just released my spirit. And all of a sudden, somebody from, like you said, it's like something lifts you up, but I didn't get to see what it was. But then I felt like a hand pulling me up, but there was nobody there because I was reaching up, but I couldn't see anything. And I was pushed way up out of the water by some force or something grabbing my hand, but it felt like somebody pulled me up, but nobody was there. So I was at the fountain then, but I don't know. It was a good in-between, and so people that remember that pool will probably remember that, how important it was back then to make it out to the fountain when you're a little kid. But that is odd. I like synergy, and I like the stories, especially when they're paranormal and they prove there are miracles or angels, as you said. I don't know what to call them, ETs, angels, same thing. But there are things we can't explain, and I never did explain that to myself. And what else, Janet? Oh, dying. Yeah, I have my last child.
Well, wait. I want to stay with the
angel
for one more moment. Did anybody else see what happened to either of you? Did you have any witnesses? Did anybody see you struggling? Go ahead. Tell us.
Yes. Oh, this is Jeanette. So I was at a lake with a bunch of cousins, and they saw my hand coming out of the water, and then it just slipped down. And they were coming, running into the water trying to get me, but they were way too far away. Same thing as Teresa. And you couldn't get me because you can't move that quickly in the water. It slows you down. And so I would bet I was at least 30 to 50 to 100 feet out in the lake. So did they see this person? No, but when my twin described her scenario, she said it was the same woman. It did not feel like a ghost. It felt like, I want to describe an angel, because she was a white see-through person, and it looked like she was wearing clothing, and her hair was long and white. It was just very odd. She was opaque. But the cousins didn't see that. They just saw a ripple in the water, and all of a sudden I came back up, but I was drowning. I mean, and that's what I found odd. All of a sudden this woman is there. Now, same thing with Teresa. Oh, she didn't see the woman, but I can tell you right now, I bet they were there, and they pulled her up because they had a plan for Teresa to be here.
Now, yeah, with your abilities, could either of you reach out and talk to the woman right now and see if she'll respond to you about what she was going on to her?
I don't know that I can reach out to her, because I think they come in when you need them. But I'm sure I did another one. Say again, Teresa?
I agree with you, because the girl that was standing there, my witness, was she said she saw me reach up, but she was trying to save herself. It was so full and strong that day. She said she reached out to try to reach, but it was too far. She couldn't get to me. It's like the same story. It's sort of spooky, you know, the same story. But no, Janet, I think like Jeanette, they just there's observers as angels or ETs, and they'll only show up when you're, I guess, when you're not supposed to leave, or they're like your, I guess we'd call them guardian angels, because I didn't really never see anybody, but I felt like a white presence, plasma presence. But
mm-hmm.
it's what
mm-hmm.
your brain does for you, because I literally remember the bubbles and the hand over my head, and the next thing I know, I'm being pushed up and I see my hand, and then I told that girl, thank you, and she said, I didn't do it. I said, what do you mean? You just saved me. She says, I did not. I saw you out there, and I saw your hand go under, but I was trying to hold on to the fountain, and I couldn't release, and you were too far away. I said, well, who did it then? She says, I don't know. I didn't see anybody. So it was real.
Wow.
Yeah,
Teresa.
Yeah, but,
you know, Teresa, don't you think they have some kind of, I don't want to call it a mystical power, but they have some kind of strange strength. And when I say strength, they can definitely push on you so hard. They can push you right out of the water. And I've heard this story before where they can really impact your physical body, which I thought was really interesting.
Bob Dean had that story too, Janet. Your friend, you met Bob Dean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Same
I wasn't
story.
Aware that he had the same story of being saved. There was another person I interviewed that had the same story. He was out under the water for a long time, and he was dead, and he did all this stuff, mm-hmm. and then the angel came and lifted him up, but not until he had, you know, a whole, like, NDE experience. So you didn't
right.
die, but sometimes people go under, they die. But the same thing, he was actually, something was had trapped him under the water, like he got trapped on a piece of metal or something that was down there. He couldn't break free,
so
that's why he drowned. And, yeah, I'll have to go listen to that story again sometime. That was really fascinating. Let's continue that.
Listen to Bob Dean's story sometime. He was out in a
mm-hmm.
canal or something where his mom told him not to play, but he went into and he fell in. But he had that angel or extra push or something. I don't remember the exact details, but we've never discussed them before. But I know what Jeanette's talking about, because it showed up, that same plasma person, when I was driving a truck, Jeanette, coast to coast.
Right. Yeah.
And I'd fall asleep at the wheel because you get road hypnotized. A lot of truck drivers talk about that plasma angel or ET person that will come and sort of wake you up, and it's like you see something, but you're not sure what's driving the truck, but you know you've been asleep for a while at the wheel. And it's like an angel tries to wake you up before you go off and wreck, you know. They catch you.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But I think the word plasma is definitely some kind of force field. I mean, I think it comes with some kind of electrical pull, you know, like a weightlifter. I grab you and I pull. It's just very difficult to define, but I think you're right. I mean, I agree with driving and people fall asleep and they wake up suddenly because they're going off the road or something and they see this thing withdraw. And but plasma and opaque, absolutely, that's the perfect definition.
Wow, that's great. We have angels.
So we'll say plasma, ET angel. So folks, we don't know what to call these beings, but we know because it's experience, firsthand experience. And we could also talk near death and when we both die.
Yeah, so let's go around our NDE story. So do you want to, who wants to go first?
Janet, why don't you go ahead, because I just heard your... Oh, can Janet go? I'm sorry, Teresa, can you go first? Or Janet, did you have one?
Let Teresa go first.
Oh, perfect.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Mine is like you rushed through yours, Jeanette, but I know we're trying to get to know you and let everybody hear the basic timeline. I've never really put mine down like you did. That's good. And Janet wants me to, but people know that I've died if they've ever heard one of my radio shows or some of them. But a fourth child, I had four daughters. She's dead now. She was ET. Even her DNA, they explored her 2 years prior, 2018, she died. But before she died, they did big autopsy, not autopsy. They did took her out and put her back in her body. They did a rebirth at the cancer center, but when she was born, she came in knowing she was extraterrestrial, and she had a little tail that clipped off. But when I had her placenta previa, I'd lost all the blood in my body. I'd fallen one day going into Houston where I taught baton twirling. She wasn't born yet, and my little three girls were there, but it was sort of raining. I slipped on the cement, what I can figure now. So that's why people say, well, what happened to you? Well, I think that's what happened. I fell on my butt with her trying to hurry in to get to, I was a little late trying to hurry up and get a piece of time. But I let that go for a little while, but apparently, I don't know how many days, whatever, but I had a slow puncture, something finally ripped. But by the time, one morning, I called my mom to come over to the house, and I had this big clunk of blood and a big clot, I don't know, about the size of a baseball or your fist in the commode, so she told me don't flush it and keep it. She came rushing over there, and she's like, oh, my God, it was so big. She's something, you know, you've either, your placenta's come out. So mother, it was 6:30 in the morning, she rushed me to the hospital. They put me in this room. I said, am I going to die? And the doctor wasn't there yet. Another couple, then the guy mopping the floor and screaming. Cause they'd hooked me and the baby up, but the baby's heart monitor stopped. Then mine stopped, but the doctor came in right before I was passing. I could still see, but I was leaving my body. But I said, am I going to die? And I know my eyes got glassy-eyed, and he looked in on me and said, not if he could help it. But they raced me down. I see the lights go overhead, two doors open. It's real cold in the operating room. Some guy grabbed my hand telling me to sign all this paperwork, which I couldn't. So they strapped a board on my right hand. Because he said, what do you write with, right or left? And I was like, right. So they stuck a board. I was just trying. I couldn't hardly even talk. Nothing would come out of me. Because all, it's, folks, it's the feeling of you're leaving. And I had no pain. I had no, it was like I had no energy. So I was disappearing. But they slapped me over on the table and threw my legs up in the stirrups, which was very cold and uncomfortable. But then the anesthesiologist was sitting next to my head. And the doctor said, you know, we've got to get the baby. And he told her, I can't give her an anesthesia. She's at 60 over 40. She's not going to make it. And he said, well, we got to save the baby anyway. And he looked at me and he said, which is it? Do you want to live or do you want to let the baby live? I said, let the baby live. And so he cut me open. And I don't remember feeling it. I just remember it being done in a big, it felt like a big flubber dubber. I felt the knife across the bottom part of it. It was right.
You're breaking up a little bit, TJ.
All right. Well, he cut me open, put her on my stomach, and a nurse yelled and screamed for some reason, but the baby had the cord around its neck and was
blue, and I passed. I was up overhead by this time, so I watched from the ceiling them take my baby over, poke her with a needle to, for blood. I stayed in the room long enough for them to poke her and to put her footprint on the ink pad, and I saw the clock, but I don't know what time it said, but when I looked at the clock, that made me zoom off racing through the stars. So that was my first introduction to, like, the universe.
Well, keep going. What happened when you were in the universe?
Okay, so I see the clock as the last conscious thought I have on the planet. But like you said, it doesn't hurt, and you're not, you're still feel like you're breathing. But anyway, I get down, but I go through, I feel like I'm on an escalator, going like up an escalator is the way I say it, because I didn't go straight up, like, you know, it scared the crap out of one of those things, you know, the amusement park. It was like an escalator takeoff, and it zoomed out through the, I guess, the building and the trees so fast I didn't notice it, because the next thing I remember is the whooshing. It's like a little bit of a white plasma. I can't tell if I'm seeing something or not, but I'm looking outside watching stars flash by, and then I go through, like, the universe, and I went up through what I call the multiverse, metaverse. But I make it up to the fifth level. I know that. They call it multi-metaverse, you know, omniverse. But I never made it to number seven, so I made it to five, and I heard people talking, and they were talking to each other, and I could just see a gold light, and I call them the gold people, the gold gods, and people say, which god level were you at? Fifth level with god, gold people. But they talked to each other, and it sounded like a man and a woman talking back and forth, but then I said, wait, I want to go back, and that elevator sort of, to me, there's supposed to be no sound, but it was like it went, and it slowed down and stopped. And it was like, they said something like, can she hear us or something? It was like, what's going on? But I couldn't hear what they were saying. I couldn't make it out. So somehow they said, I just said, stop, I want to go back. Because I knew where I was, because I was alive, but I was dead. So I knew. So they said, well, if you go back, you'll experience more pain than you've ever experienced on Earth. I said, I don't care. I want to go back. I said, the first thing I said was, what will happen to my children? No, I said, stop, I want to go back. And they didn't say anything. So, yeah, they did say. They said, if you go back, you'll experience more pain than you've ever experienced on Earth before. I said, I don't care, I want to go back. What will happen to my children? And that's when they said, all children will have to be crippled. So I was like, what?
You got cut off.
I was like, what? What? I said,
I'm
don't
sorry,
care, I want
sorry.
To go
DJ.
Back.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a lot of noise coming, and I'm not sure what's going on. Okay, so you wanted to go back,
one.
And so what happened?
A few minutes. Well, they sort of communicated with themselves. It felt like some more people. I couldn't see them, Janet or Jeanette or the world, but I could sort of see them. It was in a gold, like if you're in a room with a lamp on and you can sort of see where you're going, and it's like a shadow doorway or something with luminescence coming off of it, sort of that gold plasma stuff. So I'm trying to see in, but I haven't quite got there yet. So it's like dimensions, right? So I'm trying to see in, and I can't see them, but I can sort of see them, but I can see them. And some other visions are sort of gold, shadowy people come in behind them. And they decide something, and then all of a sudden, nobody said anything after they said, you'll experience more pain and all children will have to be your children. But I said, I don't care, I want to go back. So they sent me back, and then that whatever I was in or whatever, however you go, I don't know, but just, I stayed in the same position like a body, but I was facing forward because I was like, it's like flying with your hands by your side, but your face is in front going up as the escalator.
And all of a sudden, it's almost like I flipped over. I feel like I was going head feet first, back down. Now my head's backwards, and I came back into my body, all the way back down, you know, through the stars, through the separate, I don't know if they were dimensions or universes, slip all the way back down through them, and then slap back into my body real hard. And they said I came off the gurney 12 inches. When I came back in. Yeah.
Wow,
so then I had to stay in the what do they call that room for 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks.
ICU. Intensive care unit.
Yeah, I lost all the blood. They said as much as anybody could that didn't die, but they said but you died. So you died. So
right.
They ran out of blood, and then my father was O positive, and he had to give as much as he could, a pint and a half or two or whatever, because I didn't have any blood by the time they did it and tore me open and, you know, got the baby. But anyway, I raised up dead and set up again. I remember my mom in that room, and she said, it's been 2.5 weeks. Don't you want to see your baby? And, well, my stepfather came in and told my mother that, because she was sitting next to me in ICU. So that's the first consciousness I have, other than sitting up and laying back down, and I'd sit straight up on that gurney and sit back down for 2.5. But they took me up on air. I had that thing down in my chest, that big long pipe, and it was terrible because they didn't think I was going to live. And I remember the worst part of it was learning how to breathe again. You know, by the time they get you in a room, and then they still don't, you're touch and go. So it was about the baby was almost 6 weeks by the time I got home, but I had to learn to walk and talk again. It was terrible. But the worst thing is when they pull that big, long thing out of your throat, you know, the
I hate that,
about.
Yeah.
What they intubate you. There it is.
They intubate you, and then you're...
Oh, it's terrible, because you want it back. Oh, my God, and you think you're not... And so they put the mask on you real quick with the tanks, and they blow it real up so they fill your lungs up with air, because it feels like the pain in your lungs, I guess, when the lungs touch each other or something, it hurts so bad. So learning to breathe... first of all, was hard, and then I started learning to talk and walk, but I had to go home to learn how to, I had a therapist, but it's weird. So that's it, Jeanette, but it's really hard to learn to come back and walk and talk and breathe again, but anyway, then I live forever, and now I'm doing a show with y'all.
And there you go. I want to point one thing out. This is Jeanette talking. That what I forgot to tell people was about the gold light, and I'm really glad you mentioned that, because it's almost like this huge gold flashlight in a room or behind a door. And
yeah,
when I had my situation, there was cloudiness, like a fog where our feet were, and I got to meet relatives from a past life or relatives that had moved on in this life. But then all of a sudden I was switched over to a different line, and there's this gold light behind an area, and I thought, that's very, very difficult to describe, and here you are describing the same similar thing. And then I meet people that say, oh, I had a near death, and I say, please describe it, and not a single thing they say makes sense at all. And then here you are describing the same identical circumstance, you know, in a way, you know, in certain, from the other side, that I had the same similar thing. And I do think there are similarities. I think you're paying came directly from having a baby and the breathing and the heart. Mine was kidney failure. So I didn't have to suffer like you did, thank God. But I really believe that a lot of people have not disclosed the golden light too much. And I think all the pieces coming together are just amazing. So Janet, did you also have an NDE or you did not?
I did. I've had a couple. So, and it ties in with a... being on board a ship. So let me start with the NDE. I was very young, about 4 years old, and this guy got a hold of me, and he orally raped me. And he, you know, shoved his penis down my throat, and I choked and died, and I was out of my body. And there was somebody there that was... He put his penis down my throat, and I choked to death. I was dead, and I was out of my body. And then somebody came and was trying to pull him off of me and succeeded. And then another person came, and they were doing CPR on me. I don't know what they knew back in the 50s, but whatever. The 58 version of CPR. And meanwhile, I was out of my body, and I was watching all these people try to save me. And at the same, it's like the same time my guides came in, and we're having this discussion about, well, do you want to go back or do you want to stay here? Now, they showed me alternative timelines. And so it was like, what's my options? Well, if you stay here, so if I stayed on the other side, horrendous things would have happened to my dad, to my mother, like a different timeline, my mother, a third timeline, my brother, bad things, and a fourth timeline, my sister, because it was like It's a Wonderful Life, right? When I wasn't there, I changed this directive for all four people in my family. So I said, well, I can't do that. I'm going to go back. And so as soon as I came back in my body, now I had been kind of tossed in the corner because these people were fighting. You know, they were going to go to the police. They got really wrapped up in this high drama about the murder, the death of Janet, little Janet, four-year-old Janet. So when I came back, just like TJ, I had been kind of tossed in the corner. I had one arm behind me, the other one in front. My head was to the side. My hair was all rumpled. And you know, they weren't paying attention to me. They were doing this fight. And so when I came back in, I just literally, you know, I bolted upright. And I stood and I turned around and I said, hi. And it was like I was glowing. I was in a really high vibratory frequency. Now, I didn't feel any pain. When I was on the other side, it was just pure love. And, you know, I wanted to stay because it's like swimming in a pool of love. It's like being immersed in love. But I didn't stay because of, you know, I made a decision. And then they screamed because, you know, it was beyond their reality. They had been trying to revive me for like 30, 40 minutes. And it was like, this is impossible. So they ran out the door and, the incident happened in my bedroom. For some reason, I know why. My parents gave me the front bedroom because that's where all the ghosts were. Nobody wanted to sleep in there, so let's give it to the baby Janet. So I was living in this front room, which was the biggest room in the whole house. It was a four-bedroom house. It was the master bedroom. But anyway, I had a bed, and I crawled over into my bed. I think we were out of a crib. Yeah, it was four, so I was in a bed, and I crawled in my bed. And I fell asleep because it was such high energy. And then I became exhausted. And then I forgot most of it. I knew something had happened, but I didn't recall it until years later. And I was in a being regressed. And it came back so full on. You know, I vomited because, you know, what I wanted to vomit didn't happen, right? Yeah, from the trauma. So I finally vomited, and as I was vomiting, I saw everything. It was like I had three or four cameras going, right, like in a Hollywood movie. And I could see the other side. I could see what was going on. I could zoom in, and I guess I was in my spirit form, and I could see the sweat on their brow, right? I could see their faces and how angry they were and upset, and my mother was crying, and all kinds of stuff going on. So anyway, then fast forward till I was 7 years old, and my mother got upset with me. And I don't know what it was about. We were looking at photographs, family photographs, and I saw something, and I must have said something. Next thing I know, she's lunging at my throat. And we were sitting on the floor, so I was underneath the dining room table, one of those big, they have these big wooden kind of round thing in the middle, wood pedestal, right? And so next thing I know, I'm underneath the table, I'm up against the pedestal, and she's strangling me, and my neck breaks, you know, same thing. I'm out of body. I'm dead. I've been strangled.
She broke your neck?
I'm above. Yeah.
Janet?
Well, I'm up above. Yes, she broke my neck.
What?
Yes. So
oh
I'm up out of my body, and once again, my guides come in. And when I was at, was with my guides, there was like a one person, there was a group of people, and then they were showing me various timelines. So it was total control of time and space and distance. So they started to come in, and I looked down, and I saw my mother was grabbing me, and she was like, oh, no, not again, no, don't go. And so we didn't have a long dialogue. It was very short, and I said, I know, I'm going to go back. I said, but, you know, isn't my neck broken? So they showed me what to do, and so somehow I fixed it and repaired the body, and then I came in, and then my mother was still crying, and I just came back in. I said, that's okay, Mommy. You didn't mean it. I know you didn't mean it. I love you. It's okay. And so I started comforting her. So my mother was undiagnosed schizophrenic, and she had a lot of mental problems, and they never did diagnose her, you know, officially. She was one of those mother's little helpers in the 50s that they, you know, why they wrote Go Ask Alice when you're 10 feet tall. That was, my mother was, had gotten addicted to whatever the doctors were prescribing the day. So that's my story. Did we get your full story, Jeanette? Do you have any questions about
but,
my
you know,
story?
I just think that it's really fascinating how all these near deaths are just, they're very similar, yet they're different. And when you said you healed yourself, there is something to that factor. And I have seen that before. I'm not sure how we describe that healing process, because I know we become an orb at different times while you have a near death. And I know that they,
mm-hmm.
it's almost like a fast telepathic quick heal. I don't know how it works. It just definitely seems like either a dimension or, you know, again, something very difficult to describe. And so I do know what you're talking about, and I have heard this before, your description, Janet. And they're certainly
mm-hmm.
all really big tragedies. I mean, mine were just strange. I mean, the first time I got hurt and I had a near death, I was being told at 7, these people walked in the room, and I looked over, and I thought, oh, I'm dying. I was brought up Catholic, and what happened was the first time I got sliced across my head, and I was bleeding profusely from getting cut by barbed wire in the head, and the babysitter put me to bed bleeding. And what transpired was a man walked in the room, and he was wearing a garb as if he was a, you know how you see in the old movies, like a black priest uniform or minister uniform, monk uniform. And he came in and he said, I'm your real father. And I thought to myself, well, if you're my real father, who are these people? And he goes, well, you were reincarnated, and your father is your grandfather from a previous life in Japan. And I said, oh, okay. And he was teaching you how to write, and you got killed when you were, like, I don't know, 5 or 7 years old. And so we're going to save you and heal you. And do you remember you said you healed yourself? There's something to it.
Right.
I don't know if it's kinetic. I don't know if it's physics, but there's something to it. And it's
right.
I guess you'd have to be a scientist to get to figure out. I don't think it's quantum physics, but there is something there. But the man who touched me, I had a scar, and I still have it. It's quite long. I would say 4 inches. You know, that's what's left that you can see. And he touched it when he
uh-huh.
touched me. I didn't heal me. He healed me, and he said he was going to heal me. It burnt really bad. I mean, it hurt, and I was crying. And he said, I want to introduce you to your real mother. And by the time I was in third grade, I told my parents, you're not my real parents, and I'm just going to call you Lewis and Francis. And that was it.
Oh,
that,
no.
From then on out, they were Lewis and Francis. And my siblings were like, why do you call them that? And I said, because they're not my real parents. They're not your real parents. And it was really weird because I'm one of 5, and people would come over to the house because my dad was a really busy guy, and they'd go, is Mr. Matasia here? I said, yeah, Lewis is over at the garage. And they go, well, who are you? And I said, I'm his daughter. He goes, you mean your dad? I said, no, Mr. Matasia's over there. Lewis is over there. And, I mean, even when I was 16, where's your father? I said, Lewis is over there. I mean, people always just kept saying, why don't you call him your dad? And, you know, I'm sure my mom was unhappy, you know. But the healing thing is definitely in the category of putting the pieces together for a near-death experience.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. So let's continue with your story, because you had a lot of stuff on your bio there about your work.
We can't hear you, Teresa.
Go ahead, Teresa. You speak. Go ahead, Teresa. You speak.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Now we can hear you. Yeah.
Okay, I had to move over some my heart because my heart seems to affect my phone. But Janet, let me tell her about, remember the white sands and the family. Janet, when I was four, I went down the street because my mother had my sister, and I wanted her to take it back to the grocery sack. I had put her in a sack, and Mama got upset with me. And anyway, my feelings were hurt.
Take her back, Mama. Take her back.
Yeah. So the first time I went, I saw my father family or family in the sky, my feelings were hurt. So I ran away from home. Of course, I only went down one house, and then there was this where they didn't have a house yet in a little subdivision in Monroe, Louisiana, near the school. But I fell asleep, and I went up in a spaceship in the sky. And that's where I met my family, and I didn't want to go back down to my body. So I guess it was my first emotional trauma, you know, where, my sister's Janet's age. So she was born in October, and Janet was born in February 54. But I was born 12/26/51, which is an interesting date, December 26. A lot of paranormal stuff happens on that, the tsunami and the Jim Peniston thing and other things. But that was when I was four, and my grandmother came and got me. Mother didn't drive and told them she couldn't find me. Of course, I wouldn't answer anyway, I'm sure. But I do remember falling asleep and them taking me up in the clouds. And I wanted to go with them, and they said, well, I had to go back down. That wasn't, you know, this was my family. But I was like, well, no, because I knew they were my family. But to tell you real quick, in the second grade, I died with hepatitis. You mentioned Catholic. I have a daughter Catholic and a sister Catholic, but mother wouldn't let us join. We were Protestants, but in the second grade I got hepatitis, but I still went to the St. Francis Catholic Church. And because I died with hepatitis, they cleaned my blood. They don't know how I got it. It was a sort of a weird miracle thing that in 57, but they brought up one of the first dialysis machines from New Orleans to Monroe to clean my blood, but apparently I was so yellow that I died, so I left my body then. But I didn't go to heaven, or I didn't take a trip, but I saw two angels in the corner, and they told me I was going to be okay. So I remember everybody was really freaking out, upset, and they'd had to call the two of the nuns in, everything, and then I just sat up over my body. Maybe I did sit up. I was laying down, so that explains how I sat up and saw them. But part of me must have come up out of my body because they told me, no, lay back down. It's not your time. You're going to be okay. But I told the Catholic nurses and everybody when I came back, too, you know, like, and told them I saw angels and stuff. So that was a big deal then. But then what I want to tell you is, after that next year, I started healing, and I willed myself to White Sands, New Mexico. And my uncles worked at Los Alamos, and I got to see a spacecraft fly over me and my two cousins, 10 and 13, and they put them to sleep. And I got to go on a real spacecraft in White Sands Proving Grounds. And that's when I thought that was my father, and I relate to the movie Taken by Steven Spielberg, even though it was a story. But the story was so similar that they let me speak at Mid-South Con about it, like I was the Allie Clark. So, you know, different people with different stories and different movies. But, people just knew that story. And so Janet and I have some bunch of stories like that. But I thought I should tell you that because I don't, you know, you and I don't know each other real good yet. But that's a weird story, too, because that's like your family and you meet your father on a spacecraft in White Sands at the Proving Ground. I get to do a lot of other stuff later, I think, because of the ETs and dying. Well, is what I think.
Wait, yeah, I just have a theory. I don't know what you guys think, but ladies think. But what's interesting is I noticed that people that have near-death experiences have typically a common ground on, okay, they can do out-of-body and go into an alien spaceship, or they can do remote viewing better, or they can do synesthesia, which is seeing colors and numbers and that kind of thing. So I think that that's really fascinating because you quickly accelerated into an alien spaceship and you saw your real family. And and I just see a lot of patterning here, and it never ceases to amaze me about the similarities.
That's what I wanted to investigate with you and Janet. Janet's been having people come on for years about alien contact experiences, but I wanted to do more of the synchronicities, but we've got more than I even knew about. So somehow I hope we can do a comparison, Janet, you know, on all the things we compare, because she became an investigator and I was an investigator. Now, we should go into some of the cases that you've had. I did Agent Orange as my biggest case, and then PBA. PBA, polyvinyl, I've forgotten all the names now, 245, DD245T was Agent Orange, but you talk about yours. Mine were more like Ellen Brockovich or something, you know, but Aaron, but you talk about your cases, FBI.
And I just want to say one correlation with what you said, Ned, about the, so, around that experience I had where I was out of body because I got, you know, orally raped, I ended up going up on a spacecraft, a mothership, right. I called it, and they took me to a room where they showed a 24 different parallel timelines, one being the absolute destruction of planet Earth, and then they kept getting better with more life and less destruction until they showed me one where, you know, there were three or four that were kind of utopian. And everything in between. It was more than just visual. I was in a theater and it was visual, but it was also like I could sense everything and feel everything and see everything that was happening on the world simultaneously and just be everywhere at once. It was a very strange experience. Can't explain it. But then at the end, they said, which timeline do you want? And so I thought about it and I said, well, myself, and I'm four, but I'm actually my eternal self. I'm not my four-year-old human self. I'm accessing who I am in the totality of existence and the continuum. So I respond from my higher self perspective, and I say to myself, well, we need to leave enough to do. If I go to the utopia and there's nothing left to do, there's no reason to have this experience. So I said, give me the third from the end. It seems pretty calm, but there's, you know, still enough to do to make it interesting. And upon requesting that, and I had been teleported from my side yard, I was out picking flowers, little buttercups that I was going to give it to my mother, four, right? And I'm having these thoughts. I love my mother and I'm going to give it to her. And anyway, so they transported me or I boomed back down or whatever it was. And the sun was setting. When I was taken, it was high noon. So I'd been gone for hours. And as I was getting, you know, I looked up in the sky, I couldn't see, it was like, it was in space, right? But I had an awareness it was up, and then they kept communicating with me. They said, "You've come here to do something which will benefit all humanity." It was kind of like a Jesus thing, but I hadn't been exposed to church at that point or Christianity or something. But I said, "I can't tell those people that are my parents," and that once again the. Now I knew I wasn't. They weren't my real people, right? They weren't my family.
Right.
I can't tell those people that aren't really my family what's going on. So I'll keep it to myself. But I never forgot that. I did not have to do any kind of hypnosis around that. That stayed with me my entire life. But I never was brave enough to share it until, you know, in the last 5 years I've started to share it. So or whatever. Wow.
Well,
so there's a lot of synchronicity.
Yeah.
But go ahead, Jeanette.
Yeah, I just think a lot of people that have had a near-death experience would like to know, is there a similarity? The only thing I think, one of the many things I think that is interesting, is a lot of the NDE people are somehow connected to a UFO or somehow connected to the out-of-body or somehow connected to some kind of dimension. Personally, I don't know what it is because I haven't talked with my friends and physicists about it. But it is so complicated, and yet at the same time, it's very simple. It's like, oh, well, this happened, and I did this, and I did that. And you try to describe it just like a dream, but it's a real scenario. And I find it absolutely fascinating. I mean, I had a client who was taken by aliens. She did not have a near death. She was a teacher with a master's degree, and she was one of the people operated on. When I had a weird UFO experience, they stuck something in my lung, and I thought, I remember it, the memory got triggered a little while later, and what was interesting is they say, don't worry, it's in your lung, we'll know what you're doing, where you're going, what you're, you know, what's happening. And I thought, okay, fine. So just years later, two times I had x-rays, and that thing is in my right lung. And what's so funny is I got sick one time and my doctor made me go in and do a biopsy on that thing in my lung. And when they went to go get it, it moved. And I remember being sort of, when you do an upper GI, you're sort of out of it, but you can hear a little bit of what's going on. And I heard the doctors all laughing, saying, come here and check this out. So there were like seven doctors came in the room, and the little thing that was, it was like the size of a dime. Every time they went to clamp it like a pair of tweezers to get a piece of it, it zipped away and then went left and right and left and right. And then they pulled me out of the anesthesia, you know, the medicine they were giving me, and they said, have you ever had an alien experience? And I lied and I said no, because I didn't want to be labeled as a weirdo. Yeah, I was like, I just didn't want, you know, suddenly this woman has this thing in her lung that moves around when we're trying to get a biopsy. But I knew, I was told, they're not going to be able to get it. It's going to move. It's like a transmitter. And I personally didn't like it in me, but you know what? What control do I have?
Well,
and I was
really
motivated.
That's amazing that they asked you if you've had alien experiences. Where was this? What
happened
to that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was really sick, and the doctor said this thing isn't changing in size, so let's do a biopsy. Which I thought, you know what? Wait, great! I'll have it recorded, and I'll have the X-rays recorded and the videotapes recorded, so I'll have proof of it. Because I tell people a lot about my stories, and some people will be agreeing with the stories, like you all, and then other people will be skeptics. And I'm just as much as a skeptic, because I do remember being triggered about the thing in my lung, and I thought, oh, my God, they're going to go in and try to get this item. I said,
well, what
this
hospital
is
was that? Where was that? What hospital was
that? I was in Richmond, Virginia. It's called Memorial Regional, and I have an x-ray of my lung with it in my, you know, the item in my lung. I think it's square, if I recall. Hold on, I have to cough 1 second. But the good thing is it does move around, and they said they got the video on it moving around, and so many doctors just had to come in because to look at the process, because it just kept jumping around.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah,
so that ties in with
it does tie in with
go ahead
weird
finish.
UFO Go ahead,
well,
Janet.
TJ had a similar thing with her husband, her daughter who died, or they were talking about, is your daughter an alien, or what's going on? Do you want to share that with us, TJ?
Yeah. I got cut open after driving a truck. I was a commercial truck driver, so I've got something in my back, but my lawyers didn't want to make a big deal out of it because they checked out the doctors with the Kentucky state, and they they said, well, we don't know what it is in your back, but I've had it affect my nervous system. I'm a precog anyway, but my daughter was too. But my husband and me and her all had like knowing we're not from here. So we had like an ET family, but you don't accept this reality as your own. So it's a real strange way to be here. So when she had cancer, my husband and her both came here to fight cancer. So when we were off in another dimension or in another ship, I don't know what you want to call it, because Janet and I hadn't figured out yet how to talk to people about what she calls the secret space, because so many people made fun of Corey Good and David Wilcock and people that were crossing over into other dimensions or realms. But it, I think it has to do with the Monroe Institute, which we'll get into about your 83 cases. But in 83, the Monroe Institute sort of made it okay for some people, but not everybody, but in and out of your mind or body or experience. But my daughter was asked directly in front of me who her parents were, and she said, well, I know who my mother is. She's sitting right next to me, but I really don't know who my father is. So she said on paper, you know, Stephen Lee Parrish. But they looked at me, and he said, well, do you know who her father is? I said, well, I know who he claimed to be, and his name was Gallagher, like Irish, but he said his mother was Brazilian, but I believe he was really an extraterrestrial. And he said, well, what? He said, do you have anything to do with the CIA? And I said, well, 67, my government papers were sent in. 87, I had a rehire. I was a rehire of Terry. I remember the date, and it was May 10th and 11th, 1987, but that's the same dates I went in the NASA paperwork in 67, hard copy. But by the time Gigi was born in 74, she came in, but it was like a pre-planned extraterrestrial experiment. He said, what do you mean? So this man from Brazil was standing there because Gigi's face, she looked DNA. Her DNA clocks is 99% Brazilian, but they knew they were looking at me, a white girl, and a Brazilian-looking dark girl, and then they don't know who her father is, but she said, they said, she's not of any known earth. We can't find anything to match. And they said, so we have to go with alien. And they
can
told
I ask you a question?
Other.
What color hair does your daughter have, Teresa?
She had brunette. Blue eyes, brilliant blue eyes. But I planned that. The ETs and me were talking in my brain. You know those people that come around, you feel them, but they're not really there, and you don't hear a voice in your head. But I told her she was my miracle because I programmed her. I wanted a brunette with blue eyes, and I wanted to see if I could program her, even though my husband wanted a boy. I wanted to see if I could program that in. And it's odd, the boy that supposedly was her dad, I slept with one night, and the police came knocking on the door. He was my boss. He already had 8 kids. So he didn't want another child, but he felt like he was the donor, sperm donor. But it was really weird. It was extraterrestrial created being. And she came in knowing she was like an avatar too.
You know, they are coming, the government is coming forward and releasing paperwork on actual experiments having different time frames in, you know, throughout the years. And they're releasing them, the classified documents about experimentation. And unfortunately, you know, you could be a victim to that. I mean, there's not a darn thing you can do about it except for, hey, this has happened to me. And you could certainly say, you know, when you write your book, you can say this is inspired by a true life story. Although odd, go into the reading of this book as if this could happen to you. And because it's such it's an incredible story and it's worth sharing.
Well, she wrote a book, but she called it Intrinsic Realities, and the FBI approached her about why she chose those words, and she got an FBI clearance to even paint their FBI office. I think it was in Tampa where she had to go back to. So she was starting to wonder who she was based on the fact that she was dying, but they couldn't get that last alien thing out of her, even though they took her blood and they rebirthed her. They call it, she was in 4 trials to
try to save
her life.
What do they call that? Yeah, they call that, bone marrow transplant. So they have to wipe you down to basic core, and they consider that a rebirth, that you're a new person. It's all
yeah,
your
horrible.
They couldn't get that one element of her context of crystal.
It was stuck in.
Now, is that why she
around.
Died?
She died because the what happened is she went into her job and she got poisoned. Apparently,
right.
Alien can't live in your body when you're a blood or meat suit. It'll kill the alien if you she was the real alien and knew she was ET, but the last part of her that was keeping her alive was trying to stay alive, but that's the part they couldn't kill. They were trying to kill it, but that was the ET part of her. But she had gotten benzene poisoning from the gas. She spray painted a house without her suit on and breathed it in and poisoned her physical body. So she
did. You ever ask her why she did that? She knew not to do that, right? Did you ever ask her what made her do that? What did she say?
It was all about money and her husband. It was her company. You know, it was her company called Artisan Painting, and she had all these big contracts for houses and stuff. She'd had it like 20 years. But they were down to the wire. It was after the hurricanes here, and it was cold. And her husband was all smoking pot with the other guy that was supposed to do the house. And she was mad at him because they had the deadline to do it. And as a woman, she just went in there and sprayed because she was mad. And she said, Mom, I didn't even think about it. I was so damn mad. She just went in and sprayed it. But she went on Facebook and told us her legs were all swollen and breaking open. So she immediately poisoned her body. And the doctor said his dad died of it. So we chose him. The guy at the local Baptist hospital got fired or told to retire. So the Catholic Church here took over Ascension. And here's another weird thing. I got the name Ascension from God hitting a tree, fire, like Thor or Zeus or Zeus. I don't know how to explain this to you, Jeanette, or people out there that may care. But things happen, and shit happens and you die. But a lightning bolt hit a tree and gave me the name Ascension Center and gave me a sign, like this sign, like a three-pointed UFO with all these waves coming out. And that's how I got the Ascension Center in Hawaii and why I wanted Janet to keep it up after people synergistically involved. But that sign and everything, Gigi knew, and she had them in her life, and they mean something. They're signs, and they have to do with the sound, and she knew all that intrinsically. She knew stuff, but we didn't talk about it.
Well, the Catholic Church stole it from us, the symbols.
Yeah, they stole the God logo that came in a they stole it.
You were going to the to get the cancer treatment did you say, look, Mom, they have your symbol. They took your name, which you had done 10 years before.
Oh, 20 years. But, yeah, me and Gigi came up with this A for the they took our logo, but that was okay because they took care of Gigi and paid for everything. But only time when some people in Kentucky, we already had it years and years before that, but somehow that magazine over in Missouri got it first, but it was ours. It was our logo. And Gigi, when we went in, this is all kind of miracles, Jeanette. We don't understand it. But we're walking around ET people in human form going, what's going on all the time? But I took her into the doctor, and the doctor referred her to one here in Gulf Breeze to take care of her, what they call a general medicine, GM, Susan Langer. And when we walked in there, in the wood rack was a magazine, and it had our logo. She says, Mama, isn't that your logo? And she looked at it. I said, that's our logo. She says, what's it doing on a magazine? I said, I don't know. So she was sitting on the table waiting on the nurse. So I grabbed it, handed it to her, and she read it. She said, Mama, that's our that's our Ascension Center logo, but it's on this magazine. And anyway, they didn't put it out till she died. Now it's on the hospitals. They put it on the new medical centers and everything since she died. I think everybody knows God at a certain level, even the Catholic Church. But Janet can remember back when we started this radio show, I was talking about it. And with Janet was when you were doing that with that other couple that went to Vegas. But they called me into the – I was working at as a producer, recording artist and producer, songwriter with IBMA and BMI in Nashville and Owensboro, Kentucky, Janet. And
well,
they called
they
me
were
in
interested
there.
In ufology, so somehow we were talking. I mean, we had started talking, and I said, okay, we'll bring in somebody to tell a UFO story. But they didn't understand it. They didn't believe it, and they were making fun of you and fun of us after that. So anyway, that's okay. She died after that.
But Janet,
it's just
the point
people
is,
sometimes they giggle factor, yeah.
But Janet, it wasn't ask them. What I wanted to tell you was tell Jeanette that private investigator showed me his badge, and he was the one that redid the logo. He tried to make it Ascension different.
What private investigator?
So that's
what private investigator?
Remember the recording studio? He called me in. And one of the guys came on your show.
No, wait,
with
I got lost. I got lost. You bounced around. Was this in Florida, or were you when you were in Kentucky?
When I was in
studio.
Kentucky. When I was in Kentucky.
When you were in Kentucky. Okay.
Yeah, and I was a producer, and I was doing events and Bill Monroe event, Bill Monroe Foundation event with Dr. Mercer. And all those people in Kentucky, you Mitch McConnell people, Sid. Anyway, what it was at the Owensboro Blue, it was Sunlight Studios. It was Joel Osborne and his team in some of our videos back then. But the guy that was his friend was the PI that called me.
You're breaking up. I can hardly hear you. Yeah. Okay,
guy,
so let's go back.
There,
so anyway.
But remember, he said Catholic Church wanted to meet, they wanted to meet with me in New York.
Okay. So let's go back to the show because we've got too far off and I'm lost. Okay, so
that's
let's go back to Janet. Yeah, let's go back to Janet,
talk about your cases.
Yeah, talk about your cases.
FBI.
Woo! We just went out to space and back. Go ahead, Jeanette.
That's where the FBI case comes in.
Okay.
Are you talking about mine, Jeanette, or are you talking about something else?
No.
Yeah,
I'm talking about, we have Jeanette here as our lovely guest, and we just went and down to space and back. So let's go back to focus on Jeanette because we are running out of time. We've got just like 45 minutes, and we haven't even begun to go into your story.
Let's focus on Jeanette.
So, go ahead.
So all I want to say about my experiences is some of the people are so identical in certain circumstances, and some are patterned. The coloring, the clothing, the fog. I just think that people that lose their loved ones need to know that their loved ones are typically in their room in the hotel or in their room in the tent city at the hospital. And the entities, whether they're a ghost or a angel or a being coming to take their loved one home to heaven, hopefully, they tend to be in the corner of a room. So I think that's very interesting that Teresa goes, yeah, the angels or the other beings were in the corner of the room. I've always seen them in the corner of the room, and they even go on the ceiling. And when my clients come in, I say, as soon as your loved one is saying there's a being on the ceiling or a being in the corner of the room, that's when they have less than 3 days. And typically people call and say, guess what? They just passed. And it was under 72 hours. And I said, I'm sorry to tell you, but that is a common pattern with near-death experiences or loved ones that move on. But they're not alone. They have these beings coming and helping them transition from human life to the heavens, which is sort of nice. It's a nice feeling that you know your loved ones are going to be okay. But
I just want to let you ladies know I don't have long because I got to get up real early tomorrow morning. And so if you have any questions of me, we can always cover more material later during a later show. But back for my work, it's real simple. I do a little bit of everything in the paranormal. I just don't cover things like demonology. It doesn't interest me. I think sometimes people need to go lean over to the church and say, hey, listen, can you help me? They need to go to the experts and people who are highly educated or experienced in some categories. But
yeah, I don't
rate,
do the dark side of the force either. I agree.
No,
no. Much. That's just,
yeah, you can't handle all of it. Yeah. So
well,
anyway, so I wonder what, you know.
Story, but if you've got to go, do you have a couple more? How many more minutes do we have with you?
Well, my husband just got here, and he's got to get up at like 3:30 a.m. and we're right next to DC.
Oh, my goodness.
So how about 5 minutes? What you got? What do you want to ask?
Okay, let's wrap it up. Okay, so we'll just I'll contact you later to set up an additional time, but let's just
sure.
What's your most interesting case that you ever had?
I think my favorite first case that I ever did was a missing rabbi out of New York. I know a lot of people know me from doing the Casey Anthony case and the location of her little girl's remains. But some people in BC know about me from the Chandra Levy case. I mean, even the family for the Chandra Levy family do not know that I worked on that case. But my very first missing person case where I was accurate and helped a family was in New York City. A rabbi went missing. And just 3 days before they even called me, the rabbi came to me in a dream and told me, this is who I am. This is what I look like. Here's the picture of me. I was murdered in the basement of the synagogue. And when they killed me, it was two men who were contractors, and it was all about money. And then he showed me himself dancing, which I thought was really interesting. And I do, again, I see this pattern of people that die. You see them dancing. Their body is weightless. And they say, oh, I'm dancing because I'm happy because I'm in heaven and I'm with great people. And there's so much love from God that you feel a weightlessness. Did you feel that, Teresa or Janet, the weightlessness?
Yeah,
I did.
I called it
it's a freedom.
Love, but yeah, I can relate, yes.
It's definitely very odd, but it's so difficult to explain, but the reception
it's like
from
no
heaven
gravity,
is just
right. There's
right.
No gravity. You just know that's the real you. It's real.
Yeah.
No gravity. There's no pushing on your energy. It's you're free form, but you're still thinking. It's really weird.
it is really from the norm on Earth. It is really weird. Yeah. But anyway,
did they capture
his
murderer?
No. What happened on that particular case is that the synagogue's group flew me to New York, and they said we already had over 2,000 people try to locate the rabbi, and his name was Rabbi Friedlander, and I never went public on it, and I don't know why I didn't, but I guess I was a little scared because the contractors were a little, you know, violent, you know. I was young, and I was, God, I don't know, 27? I don't know how old I was. But I was just a little nervous to be in New York. So they flew me up there, and I told them all the details. And I said, he told me where to find, where he would be found. He said, you go over to this, I think it was over to the river or Manhattan, and there's this basin. I guess you call it a basin, a body of water, and there's a beach. And he said, you'll know because men are in military uniforms. It's a military base. Most people don't know it's here. And, I mean, I was given this long, drawn-out story. Blah, 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 blah. It was really funny. And I thought, okay, so I conveyed that to the family, and I said they threw him in a dumpster, and then they took the dumpster and threw it in the water, and the dummies didn't realize that when you're dead, you float, and his body would come onto the beach where the military base was. And I said, okay, so what's going to happen is I'm not going to stick around because he's going to be found on a Sunday morning. It's 2 weeks from now or something like that. And I'm going to stay around 10 or 11 o'clock, something like that. I mean, I gave a window, and I said these two military officers, and I'm going to lean toward Marines, are going to find him on the beach, deceased. So you get the impression, oh my gosh, this poor guy drowned. You know, he took a walk and he drowned, but that's not what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so within a week or so, whatever time frame they found him, they called me to let me know I was the only one out of over 2,000 that was correct on that particular case. Now, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm just saying I tend to be pretty good at finding the missing objects, finding the animals, finding this, finding that, which is part of my NDE experience. And I think what's fascinating is we all have a mission to you. Like, Janet, you're in Hawaii, and you're teaching all sorts of fascinating things that I don't do at all. And yet I teach other things, and then Teresa teaches what she teaches. And I think that we are here to convey whatever educational purposes we can do to help. But on my particular cases, yes, I like treasure hunting. Yes, I like the true crime. And but my favorite one on that particular case with the rabbi was that even though I think they doubted me because I looked really young. I looked like I was 15 or something. They just thought there's no way this girl can figure this out. And I just kept having a dream after a dream after a dream. And again, I think it's part of the patterning of a near-death experience. The frequency level, the fastness of the information came to me, and I delivered it, and I was correct. And then I got calls from some of their, I guess you'd call them parishioners, patrons from the synagogue. Mm-hmm. And so I think that one has definitely escalated my personal self-confidence. If somebody calls me, what I do is I offer them one fee for just doing an assessment, and then if they want me to do the whole case, I'll say, "Oh, well, the whole case is this much," and I charge like $1,200. And some people are on the internet saying I charged them $5,000. They indiscriminately threw a zero in there for their own self perpetuation. You know, but crime, you ladies know that doing any kind of this paranormal really draws on the human body, and it makes you tired. Right
it
now,
does.
I sound, it makes you, you know,
it's
I sound
Kelly
nasally
Anthony.
Because,
let's mention Kaylee Anthony, Jeanette. Let's mention Kaylee Anthony, because she's our, Kaylee Anthony brought me and Jeanette together. Remember the Kaylee, I have a granddaughter named Kaylee, and
well,
she's the same one.
Right.
I want to let her go, so let's wrap this up. So can we hold the Kaylee Anthony story till the next time, and then I'll call you, I'll get in touch with you, we'll schedule you for, I mean, we don't have very next week if you want to come back next week.
Next week is just fine. Yeah, we can work it out. Don't worry. I'm open to it. I just
want
people to know that
so that's our
the paranormal is a lot of, yeah, that's our cliffhanger, and the paranormal is a lot of fun, and you open that trap door, and you don't know what's going to come out of it. I mean, look at all this weird stuff, and it's so fascinating. I mean, that's why I used to go to the Fort Fest or watch, you know, Ancient Aliens on TV, and it's the never-ending book. it's a lot.
A never-ending
fun.
Story, yes. Well, we'll do
absolutely.
Part two next week. I look forward to it, and so let's let her go, Teresa, because she's got to take care of her beloved and has
okay,
to get
we'll
up
talk
early.
About that.
So.
Yeah, we'll talk about that Florida next time.
That would be great,
okay, Teresa.
I
so
think
we'll,
you should share it, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And
all right. Thank you for
for
having me. And if you have any questions, just give me a call. Okay.
Next week.
Okay, we'll do. We'll see you next week.
All right,
love and blessings. You take care. Aloha, Jeanette.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye, ladies.
Bye-bye, dear. Okay, TJ. So, yeah, let's kind of wrap this up in about 5 or 6 minutes because I think that's a long enough show. We did a good thing. We had a wonderful guest, and we started our story. And there's a lot more detail. We could do 100 of these shows and still not get all the information. Anything you want to share before we end this show?
Well, what time did you start it, and where are you locating it? And I guess I can grab it and throw it up on my show one night for TJ Marcy T Radio. But is this on Aquarian Radio on Blog Talk Radio is where you're broadcasting
first. Yes, I put this one on Blog Talk. So as soon as we hang up, I think it takes about a half an hour to process the audio, and then it'll be available. Teresa, you can download it and it'll upload it to your network. From my system, it goes up to at least a dozen platforms, so that'll be available later this evening. I'll put the links on AquarianRadio.com. TJ, you let me know where you're going to put the links and where you're going to upload it. So this will go out to thousands, whatever, by the end of time, end of the its circulation, perhaps millions. And, so we're going to be doing this every Wednesday. It's called The Wise Wild Women, and we are wild. The Wild and Crazy Guys. We're the Wild and Crazy Women. We enjoy bringing you these things like ETs and paranormal and extraterrestrial and interdimensional and all the mysteries of the universe. Okay, TJ, final word to you. And I'm going to find some exit music to play.
All right. Google called to verify my ACO club. So 11 to 7, folks, I'll engulf breeze. For all of y'all that want to do paranormal and on my Facebook groups, I know I've sort of neglected them during 2020, but Facebook's been finding all of them and hooking them up. They like to hook them up to my phones, which I used to do really good deep diving in HTML and Apache, but we don't have to do that anymore, and it's changed a lot for developers on GitHub and Google and GoDaddy and Janet and I and WordPress. So we'll do our best, but we're not going to pay all those SSLs for Google and domains. So, Janet, you'll just have to tell people that yours is on Aquarian Radio, and you're going to post it on Janet Lesson too, right, on YouTube. You're free. Free on mine, TJ Mars, ET Radio, or ACO Club or ACO Radio. And with Janet and I together have acirradio.com, and we can post it there because people want to know where to find it. But a lot of apps, Janet, you know, the little circles, depends, because it goes out on Spotify, Stitcher, Spreaker, iHeart, gosh, so many. I can't even remember all of them that were out there on about 14. Once you hook up with Spreaker, and we have to pay for that. So Janet and I each pay so much money. And then tomorrow, Janet, Thursday, I guess I'll hook up for the blog talk, but we want to talk to her, to Johanna, about doing Zoom and also starting some workshops, or like Edgar Cayce Institute does, but instead of people showing up, we're going to do some webinar teaching on classes on the radio.
I've got to run here, TJ.
All right.
But
I'll talk to
Johanna. And so we're going to be doing another show tomorrow. And, you know, go to AquarianRadio.com for the details. And, TJ, what website are you going to work on where you're going to put all these shows?
ACIR Radio. I've got ACIR
Radio.
ACIR Radio.
Is that .com?
.com.
ACIRradio.com.
And I've got
UAP.associates
for the UFO stuff.
Okay, so I'm going to sign off now. Much love and blessings and aloha. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
All right. Tomorrow night.
Bye-bye.